What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to Star Wars Beneath Twin Suns, episode 90. This is a massive breakdown podcast coming to you back at our usual time, back on schedule, a Sunday morning. We're going to be talking about the conclusion of the Clone Wars movie. We did the first half of the movie last Monday night or last Tuesday night. It came out sometime in the middle of this week.
Yeah.
And we're here to finish up talking about it. But first, let's get the introductions out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercules, joined today by Kit Kutcha. And how are you doing today, Kit?
Oh, I am doing pretty well. Feeling super prepared for this because I just watched the end of the film over again last night. And then I had to rewatch the very end again this morning because I definitely fell asleep at the end. I was watching it, you know, fairly late for myself, an old man who goes to bed at 9:30, 10 o'clock. So that may have played into it, but it definitely did not keep me awake, unfortunately.
Yeah, I experienced the same thing. I watched it maybe a week ago or so, and in preparation for earlier this week's episode. And I also had to rewatch it because I fell asleep at the end of the episode. So maybe that says something about the show and about the episode. But yeah, I think we just jump right back into it and kind of pick up where we left off. So where we had just ended was, I believe, Ahsoka and Anakin had hijacked the Twilight, which is that derelict freighter, and they had flown to Tatooine to meet with Jabba to return Rata. And that's kind of where we ended things, right?
Yeah. So they had taken off, and picking up from there is where I don't know. You know, it feels like in many ways sort of the exciting part of the episode is over.
Yeah.
You know, they tried to board like the Republic frigate or you know, ship, right? And they couldn't. They actually got a bunch of people killed trying to do that. And they're like, all right, I guess we're just taking this freighter all the way to Tatooine. And so they head off to do just that, only to discover that apparently Rata is quite sick. And I think this maybe is, I don't remember if this is alluded to in the movie or not, but I think that Asajj Ventress actually poisoned Rata.
Oh.
Do they explicitly say that in the movie?
I don't believe so. At least not in a way that I caught. Is that something that they said in the audiobook?
I feel like that's where I'm getting that from. I think that's one of those added details where they were just like, this Hutt's either we're returning the Hutt alive or nobody is. And that was like a fail safe sort of. So I could just be misremembering that, but that for some reason, that's what I thought was happening. And so I may be pulling that from the audiobook version, which, like I said, includes a lot more like internal dialogue and thinking from like all of the characters. So we actually get a lot of like Palpatine, like sort of like self monologuing and being very self congratulatory about this whole thing, which is kind of great.
Yeah, he's quite pleased with his plan, isn't he? Even though.
Yes. Yeah.
Do they? This is something that I didn't catch. So obviously, Asajj like kind of fails in her and what her master has told her to do, which is to keep them away from Tatooine. So she fails, and Dooku says like, "We will deal with your failure later." Does he ever deal with her failure? Or is that just continually left off screen, and we're left to assume that he punishes her in some way or another? Because I was wondering about that because he says it so ominously that you feel like, you know, something bad might happen to Asajj, but then she just continues to be a character for the rest of the seasons and is totally fine.
Yeah, I think we just assume that he, like, tortures her off screen or something.
He says, no desserts for you tonight at dinner. You have to eat all your vegetables. You know.
How dare you, Asajj? 50 burpees. Yeah.
that line in particular caught my eye, for, or caught my ear, I guess I should say, for some reason, just because I was like, oh man, well, maybe it's because, You know what it honestly is? It's because Christopher Lee is doing the voice of Dooku. Mm. And so he's got that like extra little bit of menace behind the voice. And so maybe it was just his delivery on that. I was like taken aback by how sinister it was. And then, yeah, and I was like, oh my God. Like, cause I'm used to, you know, Dooku from the Clone Wars is obviously very, very good. I believe it's, maybe it's like Corey Burton or someone who does it. It's still a very, very good voice, but Christopher Lee is like an elevated voice, right? Like he's just different. He's on a different plane. It's like using Patrick Stewart to give voices to your characters, mm-hmm. right? Like it's even you can imitate Patrick Stewart, but it's just different. The delivery is not quite, you know, the same.
Yeah. Funnily enough, I actually have a brand new Patrick Stewart magnet that,
it just says facepalm. Yeah. I appreciate it. I thought I was going to say engaged for some reason, but facepalm is pretty good too. Do you use that during work?
So
whenever someone does something, do you just look over at the magnet and you're like, I get you, Patrick Stewart?
It's actually, so I have it stuck to the boom arm for my mic, which when it's put away is directly above my work computer. So he's always there staring at me, or rather covering his face in disappointment.
Yeah. Have you,
it's pretty fantastic.
Have you ever watched American Dad? By chance?
Oh, I think I saw a few episodes ages ago when it first came out.
So American Dad, for those of you who are unaware, is an animation project from Seth MacFarlane, and it was supposed to be like the Stephen Colbert to Family Guy's Jon Stewart. Mm. Right. So it's supposed to be like a paired show that functioned on like a different level with like a conservative main character who is like satire of conservatives, kind of like that was the original way it started, right? And it's grown a lot since then, and the characters have all become deeper in their own rights. But Patrick Stewart voices the CIA director whose name is Avery Bullock, and he's like a sexual deviant, like he's just into all these crazy things, and it is literally the funniest thing. Every single episode that he's in, hearing Patrick Stewart's voice say the things that Avery Bullock does in that show never fails to just crack me up and make me die laughing. It is legitimately hilarious. The show is very weird, and it has gone through ups and downs because it left Fox and it went to TBS, and it's been on TBS for a very long time, like 17 seasons now. So it's been running forever. But it's got like an actual D. Bradley Baker, who is in Clone Wars as the voice of the clones, is in Family Guy, or is in American Dad as I believe he's Klaus, which is like a German Olympian who the U.S. wanted the Germans to lose the Olympic gold medal, so they transferred his mind into the body of a fish and transferred the fish's mind into his, so he lost the Olympics. It's a ridiculous thing, but like he's in it, and it's honestly a pretty damn good show when it's good. Their Christmas episodes in particular are legitimately some of my favorite episodes of TV of all time, but it just reminds me of that every time I hear like these super like well-known, very serious, like, you know, Patrick Stewart's a Shakespearean actor. Right. Like they're very classically trained. They're very prim and upright and proper. And they bring this gravitas to all their roles. And Christopher Lee did the same thing. And then you hear him in a character that's like just absolutely ridiculous. And it's such a fun juxtaposition. But I don't know how I got to that from Christopher Lee and this anime thing. But hey, you know what? Like I said, D. Bradley Baker's in both shows, so it counts. It's a link.
There you go. It's a real deep cut. Where were we? We're on our way to Tatooine. Rod of the Hutt is sick.
They heal him or by just giving him pills, yes. Which I complained about last time. It was like, you told me he was so sick, and then they just like give him a pill, and he's like totally fine. It's like, why was he even sick to begin with if that was going to be the solution to it?
Yeah. I love the solution. Like Ahsoka goes and like activates this holo. Speaking of connections to Star Trek, we've got the holo doctor. But it was funny because the holo doctors like give him some of these medical boosters, and if he doesn't recover, contact a real doctor. Like that's the line. I'm just like,
I wish that it had been this? Robert Picardo or whatever the guy who plays the doctor hologram on Voyager. Right. I wish it had been him as the medical droid. That would have been a deep cut, and that would have been very funny.
Oh, that would have been phenomenal. Yeah, it's definitely sort of a moment where you're just like, why was this a plot point? Like, I guess it was to like add some tension to like they needed to get off that planet quickly. But then it all was just sort of like you know, resolved with a magic pill, which, I mean, is accurate to how things are resolved in Star Wars as far as, like, disease goes, I guess. Like, we never really see anybody sick for the most part, but it just felt like a sort of like, well, we're done with that plot line. Yeah, let's get it out of the way.
It's a whole thing. I mean, I read a bunch about like the development of this thing, and even Lucas was like, yeah, the movie was kind of an afterthought. Like, I just liked the animation and thought it was good. And so we threw together a movie, and it led me down like a deep wormhole of reading reviews from people who like, who have clearly grown up with Star Wars and are not as accepting of like childish Star Wars. Cause I went from this, and then I went through Rebels, and I went through Resistance. Then I got into Forces of Destiny, which I guess Forces of Destiny is like a web series where they're like 2 to 3 minute long animated episodes. Right. And they're like extremely childish. They're for like 2 to 4 year olds. Right. And I was reading that, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. I'd kind of never heard of that. Wow, they got a lot of the actual actors and actresses to reprise their voice roles for this. Like, they actually have, you know, Daisy Ridley and Mark Hamill and John Boyega and, like, all these, Ian McDiarmid. Like, everybody's reprising their voice roles. I was like, oh, that's pretty crazy. So I started reading about it, and one of the reviews was, like, 1 star. This has ruined Star Wars. And it was like... anything that has like a feminist tint is crap, in my opinion. Don't get me wrong, I love female main characters like in My Little Pony. And I was like, this cannot be serious. Like, this cannot seriously be a review of like a 2 to 4 year old's web series talking about how this has ruined Star Wars with its feminist lead. And I was like, oh my God, dude. So it led me like deep into a wormhole of people who have like completely forgotten that Star Wars at its root is for children. And like, all you have to do is go back to what George Lucas has talked about. And George Lucas had a quote. This brings me around full circle to a quote that George Lucas had about the Clone Wars movie, right? And where it sits and like who it's angled at. And he literally says this: it falls in between in this funny world where Star Wars is, which is kind of hard-edged, but not really. Sort of on the verge of PG-13. Maybe it flips over once in a while, but it's really sort of the high end of PG, right? That's where Star Wars sits. That's what Star Wars is for, right? It is for kids in that window. And if they've done a great job, then adults can enjoy it as well. But like, I feel like people have wanted Star Wars to grow up with them as they've gotten older. And sometimes that has happened, right? We got Rogue One, we got Andor. Those things were like explicitly not for like children, you know?
Right.
But for the most part, like, that's what Star Wars has always been. That's where Star Wars was in the original trilogy. That's where Star Wars was in the prequels. That's where Star Wars was in the sequels. And that age group enjoys those things. Then that age group gets older, looks back on those things with fond memories, and hates the next thing that comes out that hasn't grown with them, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and even, like, Rogue One does a great job of, like, being a movie that's targeted to like the adult Star Wars audience, but you can watch it with your more mature kids.
It's the opposite of normal Star Wars. It's targeted towards adults, but watchable with kids. Whereas Star Wars is like targeted for kids, but watchable for adults.
Yeah. I think that is a really good sort of point to keep in mind for anybody who's maybe watched some Star Wars that wasn't for them, or that maybe they were like, this is for kids. Like, remember, like, odds are good the first time you watched Star Wars, you were a kid and it was for you.
Right.
Like, I know some people discover Star Wars as an adult, but for the most part, like, I think the people who get really into Star Wars discover it when they're young.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they're like, you know, under 10 or in the, as a teenager, you know, like, I feel like that's it can hit with kind of either of those age groups, but either way, you're fundamentally a child in many meaningful ways.
Have you seen How I Met Your Mother, the sitcom? Huh. Where the character Barney has like a theory he calls like the Ewok line. And
I've not really watched that show.
Man, it's actually very good as far as sitcoms go. But he has this theory that's called the Ewok line. And he's like, if you were born before a certain year, you loved the Ewoks and Return of the Jedi. And if you were born after a certain year, you hated the Ewoks and Return of the Jedi, right? And he uses it to deduce that his girlfriend that he's dating is lying about her age because she hates Ewoks. And he's like, that's impossible. If you were as old as, you know, the only way you could hate Ewoks is if you were born before this line, because you were too old when the Ewoks came out. So you thought they were stupid, right? And it turns out that she's just never actually seen the movie. And so, like, that's why she doesn't like them. And so it's very funny, but it's like, that is literally what Star Wars has become. And I feel like people forget this, and like the process reciprocates itself over and over and over again. And like, we got to do our best to keep that in mind, that like Star Wars is for kids. And if it's done well, hopefully we can enjoy it too. But the only way Star Wars ever truly fails is if it has made something that like kids cannot enjoy, right? Like, that's when Star Wars truly doesn't do something great. And this show was like raked over the coals a little bit in reviews when it came out, the movie. And like, we as adults can see the criticisms of it, of like, yeah, man, like it really wasn't a great story, you know, particularly. But you know, at the same time, if the kids like it and the kids watch it and the kids enjoy it, like, who cares? That's what it's there for.
Right. Yeah. There's definitely, I think, some confusion about the target audience here. And certainly, like, I think what one thing that where the plot does work is having is essentially like being able to make a hut cute. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, Rado is no Grogu, right? We can say that for sure. But I think there was certainly some potential there. And it's the cutest that a hut has ever been. I got to say that for it. So, you know, I feel like they were trying. It just wasn't for us.
What do you think the chances are that in season 4 of The Mandalorian, Ahsoka meets Rado again for some reason or another, and he remembers her as one of the Jedi that saved his life earlier? Because do we ever get like confirmation of what happens to Rado? Like, do we know if he survives or if he lives through Rada? Sorry, not Rado.
So that's a great question. Actually, I'm gonna be honest, didn't even look into it. I feel like there's like, I think there might even be like a Lego of Rada somewhere.
He only shows up, and then he's in he's in the Lost Night Sister, which is a Clone Wars like storybook. So the time is ripe to bring back Rada as a character in some Disney Star Wars project, right? And I think probably it's going to have to be The Mandalorian season 4 if we make our demands heard. If we send a petition to Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau. Because next thing. No, I guess Andor season 2 is coming out, because season 2 is supposed to come out in 2024 summer, right?
Right, right, right.
And then we don't have any other Star Wars stuff on the docket because the writer strike and the actor strike delayed pretty much everything.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I understand sort of what their goals were with the strikes, and it's unfortunate that stuff gets pushed back, but like these things have to get hashed out. And so I'm just glad that things are kind of back on track and back moving. You know, and I'm also very glad that they didn't decide to just like forge ahead without a writing staff.
Well, you know, George had a tumultuous relationship with like a lot of the guilds.
Yeah.
Like he was heavily limited in what he was able to do on certain stuff, because he had a disagreement with, I want to say it was like the Directors Guild or something. And
I think so.
Severed his relationship with them over it.
Yeah. Yeah. Without getting into any of the politics, the tangled politics of a world that I truly don't understand. Yeah, I know it plays a big role in what can and can't be done, right? Who you can and can't hire, who you can and can't work with. And so, like I said, I'm just glad to know that things are in motion, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not in a hurry. I'm planning to live for a good few years yet, and I'm willing to wait for a higher quality product when it comes to my Star Wars TV. So
has there been anything, speaking of Star Wars TV and kids enjoying it, has there been anything that has been new Star Wars that your daughter has not enjoyed so far?
I'm going to say probably no. I think she has really enjoyed all of it. Even Andor, like she got really into Andor, which sort of surprised me. I thought it might be a little too slow for her, but no, she was really, you know, like chanting One Way Out around the house. Like she was into it. So
that doesn't bode well for you if you are the jailer that she is chanting One Way Out to.
Right. No, I've always known that my fate was sealed as soon as Anakin became her favorite character. And yeah. She wasn't bothered that he becomes Darth Vader later.
She's just waiting to find a pit to throw you down into.
Yeah, pretty much. So, you know, I got to stay wary, though. It keeps me on my toes.
Mm-hmm.
No, we actually just rewatched Obi-Wan Kenobi the other week, and which, my goodness, like it just reminded me how much better that show is when you don't have to wait for the next episode. My yep. goodness, what a difference.
Yeah. how many times have we said this, but like the forced week to week wake is hurting these shows so badly.
So badly.
And I feel like Disney, it's the What If series for Marvel. Disney is releasing all those episodes at once, except for the finale. So you're going to have to wait. And then the finale is going to come out as like a 2-part thing. And I was like, this is what we need. Like this, these shows are not.
That's great.
They are not designed to be watched with a week gap in between each one. They're designed to be watched in one big chunk, like a movie, like an extended movie, right?
Right.
And it's like Netflix learned this with The Witcher, right? They just drop all of The Witcher at once because it's continuous. It's not like Star Trek The Next Generation or Strange New Worlds, which, by the way, I don't know if you've watched that yet, but it is absolutely fantastic. Strange New Worlds works totally well with a week in between each episode because it's episodic. Like the overarching story is basically a subplot and each episode is self-contained. So they're not all ending on like cliffhangers in the middle of a scene, you know?
Right.
So you get to the end and you feel satisfied. You're like, oh, that was a good episode. I can judge that episode in its entirety because everything happened in it. Right. Whereas Ahsoka is not like that. Obi-Wan is not like that. You know, it's become quite frustrating to me because I legitimately think reception to the shows is worse because of their release format.
Yeah. No, I have to agree. Like it's especially in 2023, almost 2024, to like have not caught on to the fact that if you're doing a show that has a continuous through line that essentially like is starkly interrupted if people have to wait, you're actively hamstringing your ability to get good reviews and maintain viewership because people will just drop off. People won't wait. People don't have to wait for other stuff, and so they're not going to come back to you, right? Like the market has changed, and so it only works if you've got a show where every episode, like you said, is a self-contained, or maybe at most like a two-parter where the cliffhanger is very clearly going to be resolved next week, and they've telegraphed like, hey, we know we're dropping you on a cliffhanger next week, all of the answers will be revealed. Like that's the most you get from an episodic show, right? It's like generally like a two-parter, and that's kind of a big deal. You know, my kind of analogy it would be like, you know, like when I was super into Doctor Who for a while, watching that, and it's a show where there are through lines and subplots that sort of like are, but they're all in the background. Like you almost miss it until you rewatch the season. And then you're like, oh, now I see what's happening. You get to the finale and they're like, hey, remember all this stuff that happened? And you probably just thought, oh, that's strange. And then moved on. Actually, it was super important. Here's why. And then they like spell it out for you. But it works super well. And one of the, like, it works too, because then you can have super emotional episodes in the middle of a season. You can have like 10, you know, 10 rated episodes that, and they're just like, 3/4 of the way through, like some random episode, but it's just phenomenal. And so if they want to do that, if they want to make us wait, like, that's fine. I'll watch an episodic Star Wars show. But you have to actually
Star Wars show.
Make it episodic, right? Like the Mandalorian season one, super episodic, worked really well. I was happy to wait for each new episode because I knew that, like, they made it clear, we're just going to go wandering through the galaxy, occasionally getting attacked by bounty hunters. Like, we're not going to resolve this anytime soon. Don't expect it. And so I was like, okay, sweet. And then we just have a story every week. And, like, that was great.
Mm-hmm. I kind of think that's why Mandalorian season one and two did so well, is because they were more episodic.
Yeah.
And then the stuff that has struggled, Andor excluded, Andor is off in its own world because the writing for Andor is just, it's on a whole different level. It's able to do that, but that's because the material that it came through is that style of, like, long form storytelling.
Right.
But even Andor, when you look at it, it's really, it's like four movies, right? Like back to back to back. It's literally like a four part, you know, there's three episode groupings basically that form a movie functionally that has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And then, like, the setting changes and everything changes and it goes on to the next one. But the ones that have really struggled when you look at it have been the later season of Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka. All of those, none of those were really, like, fully episodic. Like, Mando season three tried to do episodic. And it almost upset people more because there was, like, an overarching story, and the episodes, like, the overarching story was at the forefront. So then the episodic episodes came out and it felt like it took away from it. Right.
Right.
Like, you are 100% correct. The way Doctor Who did it, the way Star Trek Strange New Worlds does it, the way Mando season one does it, is the overarching story is the subplot. It is behind the scenes. The episodic part is at the forefront until the finale when they wrap everything up. And Mando season three, the overarching story was kind of at the forefront, so the episodic stuff felt like it took away from it, and people didn't like that, right?
Yeah.
Even though I think we both were like, oh, it was still, you know, pretty good as far as it goes. Book of Boba Fett struggled with it. Obi-Wan struggled with it. Ahsoka struggled with it. And, like, I would love to go back and categorize those things into, actually, this is just a pretty long movie, right? Because I think where people get so upset is they're like, oh, that episode didn't move the plot forward. Well, the reason why it feels like it didn't move the plot forward is because you have to wait a week for the plot to move forward. When that episode is just a 20-minute chunk inside of a movie, nobody's like, wow, that 20 minutes didn't move the movie forward, right? Because the part that does move the movie forward just immediately happens after it. And you understand that 20 minutes was there for world building or to tell a story or to do something, right? But when you have to wait an entire week for the plot to move forward, like, this is something that we've run into before at Bungie. Right. And it's like there is a difference between, like, development and production time and, like, player or fan time. Right. For us.
Yes.
Like, 3 months of development time is nothing. It flies by in the blink of an eye. For a player, 3 months of time is a really freaking long time. Yeah. Right. And it's the same thing with TV productions. For them, a week is nothing. That's the blink of an eye. But for us, having to sit and wait for a week, it's a really long time to have to wait. Right. And that's where I think this disconnect is happening, where they're like, oh, they can wait a week. Waiting a week allows people to stew on negative emotions and think about all the stuff they hated in the previous episode, which didn't meet their expectations, which they then apply to the next episode. And if the next episode doesn't also meet their expectations, it's just like a, you know, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, basically. It's a reciprocating process.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think what it comes down to is, like, they just got to figure out what they want to do with these shows and then actually format the release to match the goal of the show. I think that's the disconnect. And that's kind of what happens to circle us all the way back here. That's sort of what happens in the Clone Wars movie, is it was really designed to be an episodic release. It was designed to be four episodes of a TV show. And they released it as a movie, and it just didn't work very well as a movie. It would have, I think, you know, as we talked about in the previous episode, it would have, I think, been much more satisfying as a TV show. And I probably would be a lot more positive on the whole, you know, Rata plotline even as a TV show, because then it would have made more sense, right? We've had, you know, Rata feeling sick or whatever has been like a you know, moving us along through the first two episodes. And then in the third episode, they're like, okay, we're going to wrap that up at the beginning of this episode. It's no longer important. And we're going to move on into what's important in this episode. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, it served its purpose. And now we're moving on. And in the TV episode, it makes sense to maybe wrap something up quick because you've got 20 minutes, you know, especially in a Clone Wars episode. You're like, okay, 20 minutes, we're moving right along. Oh, this is kind of funny. This hologram robot doctor, you know, kind of a funny little scene. But when it's in the middle of a movie and this plot line has been going on directly in front of me for, you know, half an hour, and then you just like chuck it out the window, I'm like, okay, I guess this wasn't a big deal after all. It's very confusing. And it's solely mm-hmm. down to the way it's presented. You know, like it's so important, I think, to get right. So anyways, I feel like that was a big aside, but kind of a valuable aside in terms of how we're thinking about this.
Yeah, I mean, it totally was, and it totally does make sense because, like we said, if this had just been three episodes in the Clone Wars, it would have been a middling arc in the TV series, and we wouldn't really have had issues with it. We would have just watched it and move on. But the definition of a movie versus TV series automatically gives people different expectations coming into it, and you can't change those expectations. They've been created inside of our heads by however long we've been alive watching TV shows and watching movies. When you tell someone it's a movie, they think about it a certain way. When you tell someone it's a TV show, they approach it a certain way. And the problem is they're subverting our expectations in a way that's not necessarily right. And that's what happened with the Clone Wars. And that's what happened with the three most recent Star Wars TV shows that we've gotten that have all been live action. It just subverted expectations in a way that was not like beneficial to the viewer. And, you know, like I went back and I think part of the reason why I had a more positive reaction to Ahsoka than maybe a lot of people did is because as soon as Ahsoka, as soon as an episode released, I went back and I watched a big chunk of episodes at one time up to that episode. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, the finale came out and I went back and I watched the last four episodes and then the finale, like all in one chunk. So to me, I was functionally watching an almost 2-hour Ahsoka movie with no breaks in between. And so to me, like, and also it was, you know, my third or fourth rewatch of a lot of those episodes. So like, I think Ahsoka is one of those shows that's going to age really well as people go back and they rewatch it holistically for the second and third time. I kind of shortcutted that process. Like, I've watched the entire Ahsoka series, I want to say four times already.
Yeah.
And it has grown on me to the fact that like, I like it more now than I did the first time. Right. But I think a lot of people haven't watched it four times and they haven't watched it holistically. They watched it once, and that's probably their most negative like perspective on it, is the first time you've watched it with a week in between each episode. Like, that is probably when you are likely to be the most negative about one of these series.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, 100%. Like, and Kenobi's the same way, right? Like, watching it over the space of 3 days, like just chunking episodes together, super great experience. Everything's really fresh. Everything feels like it flows. Like it is almost just like a really long movie, right? Because a lot of times I'll break, I'm watching a movie up over 2 or 3 days, you know, especially if I'm watching it with my daughter. Just, you know, we don't do a crazy amount of screen time. And so like a lot of times that's just how it works out with kids, right? So I'm kind of used to that. And it works really well for these series, for being able to enjoy them. I almost like, you know, if you're somebody listening who's been annoyed by the live action series recently, and you feel like this might be part of the reason why, I'd almost say like, just don't watch them when they come out, just like, which is rough, right? Because then you have to dodge spoilers for weeks, you know, but it's almost better to risk the spoilers and just like actually enjoy it the first time through, because you can watch, at least wait like for three episodes to come out so you can watch a chunk,
right?
You know,
and stuff that's bad in an episode when it's part of a larger like segment, like people work in percentages whether they want to or not, right? So like the Leia chase scene in early Obi-Wan, right, is like really it's bad. It's super cheesy. It's like not at all done particularly well, right? When that is a third of an episode, that weighs very heavily on that episode. Like 30% of one episode you're like, wow, that episode was shitty, right? So that small, that 30% of that one episode tints that entire episode, which then that episode becomes bad, even though that episode might not have been bad, right? But when you watch it as like three episodes all at once or four episodes all at once, that 10 minutes becomes, you know, a tenth of the entire thing. And it works. It does a lot less work, right? You're like, oh yeah, that 10 minutes was bad, but I had 120 minutes that were pretty good.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't tint the entire thing, right? And so because people jump into these whole percentages, they're liable to color a memory or an experience they have. And so like, yeah, if 10 minutes of a 30 minute episode is bad, that entire 30 minute episode becomes bad. Well, now that 30 minute episode is bad. And when you look at the episodes on either side of it, you're like, one third of the beginning of the season was bad. Well, one third of the beginning of the season wasn't bad.
Right.
10 minutes was bad. But because 10 minutes was bad, an episode was bad. Because an episode was bad, a third of the season was bad. And it like works its way up from there. Right. And that's how like player or not player. Well, for it works the same way for video games too. But that's how like viewer expectations can kind of work against the series. But if you watch it all at once, you know, if 10 minutes of a movie is bad, nobody thinks the movie is bad.
Right.
Right. Like that's not how it works.
Yeah. Got to be at least half an hour for me to say that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that is true. If you legitimately have 30 bad minutes of a movie, like, yeah, man, like, you know, if 30 minutes of a movie is bad, like the entire 30 minutes, like it's probably going to make the whole movie seem bad.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, I could, we could very easily think of movies we've discussed here where I feel that way largely because of 30 minutes, but yeah. We're not going to talk about those.
yeah.
Look, no, I mean, that's truly what it is here. And it's just another reason why this movie struggles. Well, let's roll through here to the rest of the plot, because there's a bit more to get through. So they get attacked, you know, as they're attempting to descend down to Tatooine. Dooku knows exactly where they're going, of course, right? There's no real way for them to avoid this fact. And so he's got droid fighters in orbit. Since he's there himself, sort of makes sense. And tasks them to attack the freighter as soon as it arrives. The freighter, of course, is like in pretty bad shape. So they're like sort of actively repairing it as they are attempting to dodge these fighters. And ultimately crash land on Tatooine. We get some good, the part about this scene that I like is the interaction between Ahsoka and Anakin. Because I feel like it does set a good tone for their relationship. We get sort of a view into them beginning to understand each other. And, you know, Ahsoka sort of, you know, kind of getting rebuffed, trying to get to know Anakin, asking about, you know, his experience on his home world and sort of learning like there's something here he does not want to talk about. He is closed off. Not a happy memory. Right. Which is, I think, you know, we kind of see like something that's very alien to Ahsoka, who has no memory of her home world. You know, and so I think she's sort of is thrown by his response in a way. And I like it because it sort of sets some of the dynamic for their relationship, where Anakin is always trying to look out for her, but he's also always holding a part of himself back. And that's kind of part of, I think, an important part of the story of Anakin and Ahsoka over the course of the Clone Wars is, you know, how much she's influenced by the darker elements of Anakin without him intending to, and how much he tries to protect her from himself in a way. And so we kind of see the beginnings of that here, which, especially having, of course, watched all of the animated series, I think I'm able to appreciate maybe in a way that wouldn't have come through the same if this is the first thing you've seen.
Yeah.
So I think it gains an added meaning for the longtime fans going back and rewatching this. But I liked it. I like the dialogue.
Yeah. I mean, it's I think the Ahsoka Anakin dynamic is probably the strongest part of this of this movie, right? Like 100%. The budding dynamic between the two of them is probably the best part of the movie. The entire hutlet stuff is pretty weak. However, you know, we stopped off before you got to this part, but
we
get to meet Zero the Hutt.
Oh yes,
for the first time.
I did skip over that scene.
Yeah. So how do you feel about Zero? He's an interesting character.
I mean, I feel like somebody said, "Hey, could you write like the cheesiest gangster hut possible and make it purple?" And some writer was like, "I mean, I guess. Like, is this a joke? But all right." And they did it. And then that's what they went live with.
So he's based on someone. He's based on some old actor. Truman Capote is who he's based on.
Okay.
And I am not familiar with anything that Truman Capote has done. So he wrote Breakfast at Tiffany's, actually.
So, yeah, I know of Capote as a writer, essentially, as like he wrote like a famous true crime novel.
In Cold Blood. Is that Murder by Death? And the Innocent. Apparently, he wrote a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a prolific true crime writer. That's more or less the only place I had heard of him from before. So I also didn't know what to make of that reference. Because I've never seen Capote as an actor in anything.
He was apparently very short. He was 5'3".
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess if this is what Truman Capote is like, then good job, but also why?
Yeah. I didn't get that reference. Maybe if I was a little bit older, I would have gotten that reference, but I was like, what is this referencing? It seemed too specific to not be referencing something, right?
I feel like maybe Zero works if you're older and you get that reference. And I feel like Zero maybe works if you've got a young child and it works for the young kids. Because Zero is definitely sort of the kind of an oddball character, almost like the Jar Jar of the Hutts in my mind. Where like, this is probably really funny for a kid. And for me, I'm just like sort of the what is happening on my screen feeling, right? Like just blinking, shaking my head. Okay.
Yeah.
Possibly the worst subplot that Padme's ever been in.
Yeah. Barely has anything to do with it. She goes to confront Zero. Zero kind of foolishly calls Dooku in a panic. And is like, you know, they're on to me. They came to investigate. And that's how Padme learns that it was actually Dooku's plot. Interestingly, and this might just be a design thing, Zero has a large black sun symbol tattooed on him, which means that he would technically be like a Vigo or a lieutenant in Black Sun, even though he's a Hutt, right? So I don't know if that was just like, oh, that looks really cool. We should put that on him. Or like it is actually canonically in Black Sun as a lieutenant or has been at some point in the past, perhaps. Maybe that's where he did his like internship and being a gangster. Zero actually has quite an extensive biography. In Clone Wars a number of times. And in the end, unfortunately, his conniving ways catch up. Tyus Noodles, who is the singer in the computer animated singer that they added into Return of the Jedi in the like special edition, where there's that like extended singing scene that's really like, wow, why did they put this in there? That's not Snai Soodles. And she is Zero's lover and actually murders Zero because Jabba pays her to kill him, which is kind of funny. And that's in a weird linkage. That's the episode that Keenan Voss is in, where Obi-Wan and Keenan Voss are sent to like hunt down Zero because
it's quite a convoluted plot. Although I guess I will say, like, certainly from this subplot, I can understand why Zero, despite being Jabba's uncle, was passed over for leadership. And why Jabba ended up in charge instead. Like, certainly Zero doesn't display the the cunning, I think, necessary to rule the Hutt clans. But here we are, yeah. And so Padme ultimately, you know, eavesdrops, gets herself captured, gets herself imprisoned. And manages to sort of like, by reverse psychology, convince the battle droids to answer her communicator. C-3PO is calling her for help, and then she tells him she's being held prisoner by Zero. So, I mean, I guess that whole plot sort of, it does play an important role, right? It gets the Republic out of trouble. They can say, hey, actually, like, your uncle was behind this whole thing. It's not us. So, about those hyperspace lanes.
It's interesting. The whole Hutt thing, this is not unique to this one episode. They do, and it's so weird that it could only have been done by George Lucas, because George Lucas is the one who would do this. But the entire, like, deep dive into the Hutt clan in the Clone Wars, right? Where, like, they've got a council of Hutts, and every one of them is, like, a very stereotypical, like, gangster archetype, right? Like, they've got the guy with, like, the Hutt. He's got, like, hair, and it's, like, combed over to the sides and, like, a monocle. And there's, like, Mama the Hutt, which is, like, a super big fat Hutt that lives, like, out in a swamp. And it's, like, this is so weird that this could literally only have been done by George. Like, nobody else would have approved something like this in Star Wars other than him. And, like, you know what the problem is? Is that it actually kind of works. Like, when I'm watching it, I'm like, this is ridiculous. And by the end of it, I'm like, okay, I can dig it, though. Like, I can roll with it. Like, all right, it's not too bad.
Yeah.
Because the archetypes exist for a reason, right? And so, like, initially, you're put off by seeing, like, a Hutt look like this. Because our only Hutt experience is Jabba the Hutt, right?
Yeah.
So you're, like, put off by seeing a Hutt look like this. But by the end, you're like, okay, all right. Like, I can vibe with it.
That's the Lucas effect, right? He does something just absolutely off the wall, but somehow manages to convince you that it's actually now entirely normal.
Yeah. So she, you know, C-3PO calls her, and she's able to summon help, and Zero is arrested by the Coruscant guards, which of course are the very cool looking, you know, red and white armored clone troopers. In the meantime, we've talked about this, but Anakin and Ahsoka show up on Tatooine, get shot down. They come up with a ruse where Anakin will pretend to have Rata in his backpack, knowing that Dooku will attack Anakin, assuming that he is the one that has Rata. This is a little bit of growth. It shows that Anakin trusts Ahsoka to go off and do something on her own, right? So Ahsoka manages to make it into Jabba's palace, not quite unmolested. She does get ambushed by a couple of Magna guards, but she is able to beat them with a little bit of struggle. And
interestingly, Anakin actually beats her there,
even though he fought Dooku.
Yeah, he fights Dooku, but it takes, like, the fight against the Magna guards for Ahsoka, and I appreciate this, you know, because she's still a Padawan and a young Padawan at that. So it's essentially like her retreating the entire battle. Like, she literally falls down like a massive sand slope at one point. And has to, like, roll and, like, land on her face to protect Rata. So it's very much her playing the defense until she manages to get an opportunity to take the Magna Guards out one by one. But she sees Anakin on a speeder heading toward Jabba's palace. Like, he's up on top of the ridge, and she tries to shout for him, but he doesn't hear her. And she's like, he never listens.
Actually, I forgot about that part, yeah.
Yeah, so he actually gets there first, and he's like, hey, where's my Padawan? And the Jabba's droid is just like, oh, right this way, but please hand over your weapon first.
Yeah, so they do eventually get to the palace, and Jabba's basically like, I'm going to execute you because of all the stuff Dooku has been telling me. And they're like, what are you talking about? We've got Rata. He's perfectly fine right here. And they're saved in the nick of time by Padme Amidala calling and being like, this was actually a plot that Zero the Hutt had. And you know, so it ends, and they're all very happy, and it plays the Star Wars theme song as it ends, and like It's definitely a story arc. Like that is
yeah,
pretty much what I can say about it is like it is a story arc. I didn't hate anything in the second half, but you know, I think we talked about this in the beginning. The failed part of this was that it was called a movie.
Right.
And because it was called a movie, there were expectations for how a movie should work, and it did not live up to those expectations. Taken individually, you know, as a sum of its parts, it's fine. There are certainly worse arcs in the Clone Wars than this arc.
Yeah.
Like, by far. There are also much, much better arcs. Even in season one, there are much better arcs. And that's kind of the crux of what it comes down to for me, is that I really wish that they had just picked a different arc to make the movie. Because either the Twi'loth arc or the Malevolence arc would have been better and maybe would have changed the way this movie was thought of. But they didn't. They went with this one. And so, like, you know, what did we give the first half? Did we give the first half like an 8? I feel like the second half for me is like a 6, maybe. Because like it's not bad. There's nothing about it that I think is bad. But it's also not good.
Right.
And there's really not very much about the second half that I think is good. Short of the conversation that Anakin and Ahsoka have on the Twilight.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I could almost give it a 5. Like, it's just very middling. As a movie, especially. Like, if these were TV episodes, I might rate them more highly. But they're not. So I have to rate them like I would a movie. And just the... For me, what it comes down to is just the utter lack of any sense of the stakes being real. And so, like, the whole, like, conclusion, it's just like, what are they fighting for here? Like I'm almost like, I'm with Anakin. Like, why did we even bother? We would have been better off staying home. And so it's... I'm going to give it a 5. I'm going to be pretty harsh here. Possibly the harshest I've ever been. But it just wasn't good. And I feel like maybe if they had changed some things around, cut out the Zero subplot or something, and added in some scenes to make the stakes feel real, like have, you know, Republic cruisers getting ambushed from the Outer Rim and destroyed, and like, oh, we can't pursue them, you know, because we don't have access to these hyper lanes, and you know, we can't start a war with the Hutt clans by, you know, attempting to use their hyper lanes without permission. You know, like something, anything, I don't know, just to make it feel real. And then maybe we conclude with like, okay, now we're launching attacks in the Outer Rim and we're showing up and, you know, smashing some clankers, right? Like, but there was none of that. There's no, the stakes were very abstract and imaginary. And so it just doesn't feel like it was worth it.
It's a problem that Star Wars constantly runs into, where like, you know, the main characters aren't going to die, so those stakes aren't really worthwhile. You know that the war isn't going to go a specific way, so those stakes aren't really worthwhile. And in some episodes, they've done a really good job of not making the stakes about the main characters, and instead making the stakes about things that happen around them, or about not saying like, oh, if we lose this, we're going to lose the war, because you know they're not going to lose the war, which means that you don't believe in the stakes in the beginning. But saying, oh, if we lose this, the war is going to be a lot more difficult,
right?
Or like, it's going to be difficult, or we might lose something that you don't know that they can't lose, right? And so then, even though you're like, okay, well, I know they're not going to lose the war, but this other thing might happen to them in the meantime, or this other character might die, or something along those lines. Like, it's difficult to play off like, oh no, Anakin's going to lose to Asajj, because you know Anakin's not going to lose to Asajj, just like you know Anakin's not going to lose to Dooku.
Right.
So your only options are make the battle itself between them super entertaining, so it feels worthwhile, right? So even though you know that Anakin's not going to die, you're still interested to see how he wins. You know he's going to win, but you're interested to see how he wins. Or you have to make it about something else, like, you know, they did a really good job of this in the Clone Wars series, but making it about the clones, because all the clones could die.
Yeah.
And so none of the clones are ever safe. And so some of the most emotional, you know, heartstring pulling moments in the Clone Wars TV series happen where the clones are at, you know, the clones are at risk, and sometimes they die. And sometimes they don't, but because you don't know which ones survive and which ones don't, you know, you feel those stakes are real.
Yeah. Yeah. That's truly one of the things that makes the Clone Wars animated series great, is that they build your relationship to the clones and they build your investment, and then they slowly kill them off. It's like I get chills thinking about just like the emotional like daggers that wait like every time I rewatch that show, because I actually do get invested. Like the clones are incredibly well voiced, well portrayed. Like Dee Bradley Baker just crushes it. Like, you know, it's like, how do you take like 100 characters that are all just clones of each other, visually, virtually identical, sound the same, and you make each of them feel like their own person? Like, I don't know, but Dee Bradley Baker knows, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. And unfortunately, that's, you know, that's just not, I don't care about Rata, right? I don't care about Jabba. And I don't care about Zero, and everyone else I know is going to live. So there's just no personal stakes at all in this film. And that's why I come down on a 5.
Even the Phantom Menace and Return of the, or sorry, A New Hope, like Obi-Wan dies in A New Hope. Not something you expect, but it happens. Qui-Gon dies in Phantom Menace. Not something you expect, but it happens.
The brilliant thing about like the first time you watch A New Hope, you haven't seen it before, you assume these characters will all survive because they're all protagonists. Like Obi-Wan is very much set up as like a protagonist. And then he dies, like, and you've still got a bunch of movie left. And you're just like, oh crap, like nobody's safe. You know, like probably Luke mm-hmm. makes it through, but the rest of these people, I don't know. It's brilliant.
And Empire Strikes Back, Han gets frozen in carbonite. You don't know if he's going to survive. Luke gets his hand cut off.
Yeah.
You know, it's like real stakes, things that happen. And yeah, this, you know, those are movies. This is a movie. There is an expectation of some sort of stake, and instead there is just none. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Well, and another example, right? Like even with, you know, in Attack of the Clones, like we know Anakin survives, right? But He gets his hand cut off, right? Like there are stakes that where you can hurt a protagonist without killing them. And unfortunately, that's just, there was nothing like that in this film, nothing to make the stakes feel personal.
And it's fine if you don't want to have high stakes. You can have stories that aren't high stakes. The Clone Wars does it all the time.
Yeah.
Stories that are more just like interesting, world building stuff, and they don't pretend like the stakes are high.
Yeah.
And I appreciate those stories too, but this thing feels like it got caught in the middle of like, oh shit, we have to make it a movie, make the stakes higher, but they couldn't change the story. So they just tell us the stakes are higher, but they're not really very high at all.
Yeah.
You know, even, and Anakin even says it. It's like, why does this stuff even matter? Like, who cares about any of this? And it's like, yeah, that's how I feel about it, is like, yeah, like arguably you could just not do this stuff. And if it had been a TV show episode, I'm sure they would have been like, yeah, I know, but like Palpatine wants us to do it, so we're just going to do it. And I would have been like, all right, I buy that. Like that's kind of the way this works.
Yeah.
But in a movie, it's like, no, the fate of the galaxy is at stake. And it's like, no, it's really not.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's anyways, we've harped on that quite a lot. Do we have any last minute trivia here that we want to throw in? There is actually quite a lot of good trivia behind this film.
A lot of it is like background characters, like people in Zero's palace. There's like a bunch of named characters that are in the background. There's Gaw-Nocht, who's a Trandoshan. There's an Aqualish who's been in a bunch of stuff because they reuse background characters. But the funny thing about them reusing background characters is they name the background character model, and then when they reuse it, it's like actually canon that is the character in that place. Kind of makes the galaxy feel a little bit smaller, which is nice and which is fun. You know, there were a handful of deleted scenes that they ended up not putting in. There was Through the Ranks, which is an extended version of the scene where Anakin and Ahsoka sneak through the enemy lines. There's an extended version of a fight between Anakin and Ahsoka against Asajj Ventress. Some of this stuff I wish There actually, all of the scenes that were deleted were Anakin and Ahsoka scenes. And like, part of me wishes that that stuff had been kept in just because the best part of the episode was the Anakin and Ahsoka relationship. So anything that was more Anakin and Ahsoka, I would have enjoyed.
Right.
And like, less Rada. Because like, even if the, so look at it this way, if the intent of the movie had been to show how Anakin got a Padawan and how their relationship grew from him not wanting a Padawan to him begrudgingly accepting a Padawan to him trusting the Padawan, that would have been a good movie right there, right? Doesn't even necessarily need any stakes because you don't care about the stakes. What's happening is the growth of these two characters together, and all four scenes that they removed were scenes that involved Anakin and Ahsoka. And I don't know what was in them. I don't know if it would have made it any better. But like, that's what I would have liked to have seen more of. Because I feel like, to me, that's a good justification for a movie. Nobody knew that Anakin had a Padawan because Anakin didn't. And then George just decided he did. I would have loved the entire movie to have been about that focus, you know?
Yeah, I think if we had had much more focus on developing their relationship and sort of like it had been about Anakin coming to accept Ahsoka as a Padawan, and they had maybe thrown some more conflict between them, right? You know, it's like they almost could have gone to like the classic like romance movie plotline, right? Like they're brought together by fate, they start to get along, some conflict arises that pushes them apart, and at the end they reconcile and they figure things out. Like it's a classic plotline, but it's classic because it works, right? There's a reason that literally there are a million movies with that plot line. It's because it works. And that's all they had to do, really, I think, to make it a good story, and then just, you know, throw some fun Star Wars window dressing over those bones. And I think it would have honestly worked a lot better than what we had, because there wasn't really, there was never any true conflict between them, right? Ultimately, Ahsoka did what she was told, even if she was snippy about it. And ultimately, Anakin accepted her more or less from the get-go, even if he was, you know, grumpy about it. And so there just was no conflict at all in that relationship.
Yeah. And it's like, this is a pitfall that I think a lot of directors fall into as well, is like, feeling like you have to have big stakes for a movie, right? And like, that's not entirely true. You don't. The sequels fell into this super hard with bringing the First Order back and everything, right? George Lucas's original plan for the sequels was a much smaller stakes, at least until, you know, the end, right? But initially, it was supposed to be a small stakes, like family drama, right? About the children of Han and Leia, and about how one of them gets abducted and turned to the dark side. And it wasn't going to be about the galaxy being destroyed until, you know, the end. It was originally going to be about this like family dynamic, right? He was going to go the opposite direction and not do a whole big stakes galaxy being destroyed thing, because that doesn't feel right after you just did that in the original trilogy, right? So there is a world where you can do small stakes movies. That stuff happens all the time,
yeah,
right? Marvel is also kind of struggling with this right now, because of course they had the biggest stakes ever with Endgame, right? And trying to pretend like there are big stakes in movies after that is really hard. And so we've even seen that they've had to like refocus a lot of their stuff on like much smaller stuff, like the new series Echo that's coming out, Hawkeye, the like Christmas one that came out last year, the new Spider-Man ones, like focus on the small. It's totally fine to do that. And in fact, I think that's what you should do when you've just had stuff with huge stakes. Don't try to go bigger. That was the biggest mistake I think that J.J. Abrams made, is like he tried to go bigger.
Yeah.
And you try to go bigger and it's really hard to do that and have it be convincing.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay to focus on the small, build back up to that big, right? That makes sense. That makes people feel like, oh, okay, like if the First Order had started out small and over the course of three movies had built up big, then in the third movie, it feels earned. But just jumping right back into things with huge stakes, it doesn't feel earned. And now what we're seeing is everything that's taking place in between the original trilogy and the sequels is having to like justify those big stakes in the first thing. It's completely shifted the entire dynamic of where, you know, the post-Empire era can go, because they have to work on justifying all this stuff. So,
yeah,
you know, I would have loved to have seen a small stakes like thing
where stuff still feels important. It just isn't necessarily important to the fate of the galaxy.
Yeah, exactly.
Here and now.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like this could have repercussions, but right now what we're worried about is getting the kid back. You know, like that's a stake that's personal, that feels important without necessarily feeling like big in terms of a wider galaxy, right? That's a stake that, you know, it's very clear that like there's a deeply personal and emotional outcome. Either you save them or you don't. And either way, like someone's life has changed forever. And, you know, it's got everything I think that you need to have a great film, but that's neither here nor there, unfortunately. And maybe we'll get those kinds of stakes explored in some other media at some point. You know, we can certainly hope.
We kind of got it a little bit in like The Mandalorian and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably why people like that so much. It didn't feel like the whole galaxy was extinct.
Exactly.
It felt like a father and son, you know, going on missions. And honestly, like part of, I think what some people are having issues with Ahsoka was that the high stakes part was Thrawn, but the actual story of what was going on, like people are focusing on the high stakes thing. The actual story of what was going on was like Ahsoka and Sabine's growth together. Right. Like that was an extended version of what we saw in this show. This show is Anakin and Ahsoka getting thrown together and learning to trust, learning to grow. And Anakin, of course, comes around to the idea way faster than Ahsoka does. Right. But like, really, that's the core story in the Ahsoka movie, is like her coming to terms with being a master when she doesn't want to be. Right. And she thinks she's failed.
Yeah.
And so there's a little bit of symmetry here between this Clone Wars movie and the Ahsoka series. But, you know, like the Clone Wars movie, they threw in some high stakes stuff, which is the Thrawn storyline. And so the Thrawn storyline ends up overshadowing a lot of what I felt like the actual best part of the Ahsoka series was, which was her characterization and her change. And I still love the Thrawn stuff because I just love Thrawn. And I think, you know, he's a great character. And I like the way that he was used in the series as well. But there is no denying that like that entire series is tinted with the Thrawn stuff because people are pissed that Sabine freed Thrawn. And, you know, people are like Thrawn wasn't portrayed well enough and Thrawn didn't have enough time. And it took them 6 episodes to get to Thrawn and all that stuff. And I'm like, well, you know, I get it. I really do. But like Thrawn is going to be around in this universe for a while. This was just an introduction to him for people who hadn't seen Rebels. It wasn't anything more than that. But people wanted the Ahsoka series, I feel like, to be like the Thrawn showcase.
Right.
And it wasn't. And then people are disappointed. And what it actually was, like I said, it was Ahsoka coming to terms with being a master.
And yeah, like I think part of the struggle was that I don't think they got quite right in Ahsoka. And it's a tough act to balance. It was trying to find the balance between telling those two stories. And I think in some ways, like having the specter of Thrawn kind of throughout almost did distract from the more personal story that they were also trying to tell. And it made it, you know, they were almost, it kind of felt like they were competing for screen time, right? Like these two different stories were sort of competing to tell themselves instead of meshing together. So it's not a perfect series, but it is a series that I did enjoy. So
yeah, I can agree with that. You know, what if you think about it this way, what if all of the Thrawn stuff had been in the last episode? Like everything that Thrawn does in that entire thing is just one episode. So you've got 7 episodes of the Ahsoka story and all that growth. And then you've got one episode where it's basically Thrawn just kicking their ass and then escaping, right? That to me would have played a lot better because the specter of Thrawn can loom the entire time. That's good to have that there.
Yeah.
To understand what the stakes are. But the fact that they introduced him in the midway point meant that you had like a before Thrawn and an after Thrawn part of that series, right? And him sharing screen time and all that stuff. Like to me, it would have been more interesting if we have 7 episodes of Ahsoka to where we can really focus on just her. And then you have an episode of Thrawn that introduces him just winning across the board. And then he leaves, right? And so you're like, wow, we got a bunch of good Ahsoka stuff. And then holy shit, Thrawn just came in and kicked ass and now he's gone. And like, oh boy, we're in trouble. It would have been that type of thing. I do feel like, you know, editing is so tough. Editing can make or break something. And the way these stories have been put together, like I'll even say the same thing. Like the worst part about the Leia chase scene in Obi-Wan was the editing of it. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't cut together very well. The worst part about a lot of the Book of Boba Fett stuff was the editing. Like it just wasn't cut together very well. Yeah. And like, yeah. And the best part about the original trilogy was they re-edited almost the entire, sorry, A New Hope, not the entire trilogy. They re-edited almost the entire original or New Hope because the first cut wasn't edited very well. And so they went back and they redid it. And it's like, man, that type of stuff can have such a huge effect, right? Like that's why people have done like Topher Grace, who you guys may know from That 70s Show, or as Eddie Brock, which I guess was Venom from the third Spider-Man, Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie. Topher Grace like re-edited the prequels into like a long, like 4-hour movie. And a lot of people who have seen it said it's like functionally significantly better than the prequels on their own. Because he re-edited it. I think it's somewhat similar to like the Machete Order, where the second and third movies are like one movie that is interspaced with flashbacks to the Phantom Menace, right? And he cut out a bunch of like unnecessary stuff. And from, you know, I've never watched it myself, but from what people have said who have watched it, it's like it does a much better job of stepping up the drama and making it feel a lot more serious and making it feel like the stakes are higher and stuff like that. Editing can be everything. And I feel like a lot of these new Disney shows are struggling with the editing doesn't benefit the story. It can actually kind of hinder the story. And like the meat and bones are there, but the way they're put together just isn't quite right.
Mm. Yeah, I think there may be a thread there to pull on. And hopefully it's something that they can figure out, right? Like between the release format and the editing, you know, like you said, like the casting is there, the acting is there. Honestly, in many cases, I think the writing is there. And, you know, like special effects wise, you know, stunt wise, like for the most part, I'm pretty happy with, I'd say, 80 to 90% of all of that. Like there have been a few stunt scenes where I'm just like, that didn't quite look right. You know, and there are some special effects where I'm like, maybe some fight choreography that just didn't feel on the level of the movies, which is a tough bar to hit as a TV show, I think. But, you know, unfortunately, it's a bar that's been set. And so, they're going to get measured against the movies one way or the other. But ultimately, like, there's so much that's good, so much to like. And I just kind of hope that they're able to get out of their own way with some of these things. The editing thing is always a harder ask. There's true artistry in the ability to successfully edit film and TV into something that is not just watchable, but like actually beautiful.
I honestly think editing is potentially the most important part of like the filmmaking process, because if you have a good editor, they can take stuff that is not good and make it good. But also if you have a bad editor, they could take stuff that's really good and make it bad. And like one of the things I actually saw this criticism the other day, and I was like, you know, there's some truth to that. It was like the way Thrawn, his plans, right? From my perspective, his plans went exactly how he wanted them to in this situation. He used a bare minimum of materials to escape, right? He cut it as close as he possibly could have, but he got away. But someone pointed out that he never says what his plan is before it happens. He always says what it is after it happens. And so from their perspective, he was just excusing defeat. That was not what he had planned to do. He had lost, and then he was making an excuse for it. Well, because I've seen Rebels and I've read the Thrawn books, I didn't take it that way. I thought that that was his plan from the beginning. But from someone who wasn't familiar with those things, sure, to them,
yeah,
it just sounded like, oh, I lost that, but it's okay because here's the reason, right? And that's editing right there.
Yeah.
Like they decided for him to say, oh, I just lost 2 TIE fighters, but that's okay because blah, blah, blah. As opposed to him saying beforehand, send out these 2 TIE fighters. I don't expect them to come back, but hopefully they'll delay them long enough. Right. Which is exactly what happens. But he doesn't say that beforehand. He says it afterwards. So they're just like, you just lost 2 TIE fighters. You're just excusing why you lost 2 TIE fighters. Right. It's like that type of stuff.
Yeah.
where it's like the exact same lines just said before the two TIE fighters are lost compared to after the two TIE fighters are lost. Completely changes the way someone who's not familiar with that character receives that character in terms of tactical genius or being an idiot who's just excusing flaws, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah. Boy, I had not curse of knowledge right there, right? I also, because I've got such familiarity with the character, I wasn't able to see it from that perspective. But when you do, yeah, when you do explain it in that way, I'm like, okay, I can see where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm. And so it's stuff like that. And, you know, I am the person who, like, I think we talked about this in a prior episode, but I had a realization the other day when I saw someone was talking about CinemaSins and they were talking about them in a positive light, right? And they were saying, like, what would happen if the original trilogy came out now? And I was like, well, they'd be freaking picked apart. They would be absolutely picked apart. Every single thing that happened in the original trilogy would be eviscerated.
Yeah.
Right. And I have said this before, but like the mark of like a true fan or a true creative is using your imagination to make the story better, not using your imagination to pick holes in the story. These stories are fiction. This stuff didn't actually happen. There's tons of holes in the story because it's not real, right? You should use your imagination to improve upon the story. That's what Dave Filoni did with the Clone Wars. He used his imagination to make the story better. That's what a lot of the Star Wars authors do in their books. They use their imagination to improve upon the story. They don't use their imagination to cut holes in the story or to chop it down, right? And that's where I feel like I kind of land as a fan. I think you land there as a fan too.
Right.
If we can find a justification for something that happens, we're like that. That's great. We'll use that justification. That becomes the headcanon for us, right? Whereas some people are like, let me find how many ways I can count that this isn't correct. It's like, well, yeah, you could do that, but that's not nearly as much fun as finding a bunch of ways where you could make it work.
Yeah. I think there are people who maybe take a sort of perverse enjoyment from it, but I feel like it's ultimately sort of a self-defeating hobby because...
Does that make your fandom better?
Right, yeah.
Right? Exactly like you said, it's a perverse enjoyment. Like they delight in how many flaws they can pick out. It's like, is it fun to be a fan that way?
Right, right. Like you can enjoy, you know, here's the thing, right? You can enjoy a fictional character who just wants to see the world burn. That can be a fun character in a story, but that person in the real world is just a dick.
Yep.
You don't want that person around, like, you know, and unfortunately, that's sort of the mentality when you devote your life to tearing down movies and films. Like, I just can't feel like that's a good use of time. You know, like if I had the time and the editing skills and the energy to go do something like that, like if that's something I wanted to devote my time to doing, it probably would be called headcanon, and it would be the direct opposite, where I literally just spent my entire time making excuses for all the things that didn't make sense.
Yeah.
Finding reasons in universe to justify everything.
It's the opposite of CinemaSins,
yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. Like literally that, like you make a YouTube channel that is just you justifying everything that happens in a movie that might not make sense at first blush. I like that idea.
Call it film blessings, right?
Yeah.
Like, all right. Well, I think that more or less, you know, brings us to a close. If you're listening and you start a film blessings YouTube channel, I'll subscribe. In the meantime, I believe are giving this film a composite overall rating of approximately 6.75, which feels fair, almost generous.
Yeah, yeah. You know, 6.5, we can round down a little bit.
That's probably right.
I think 6.5 is about what it deserves. It's, you know, again, I will say that like there is very little Star Wars that I don't enjoy watching. And this is no exception. I enjoyed watching it, but that doesn't mean that it was necessarily good. Like, right. It is a rare day. I think we have gone under 5 only a handful of times. Anything under 5, I legitimately, like, didn't enjoy watching.
Yeah.
And I think we've only gone under 5 a handful of times where, like, I would actually skip that if that came on TV. And, you know, so this is not one of those things. But I won't tell you that I was super excited about it. And I also will not tell you that I didn't fall asleep during it, because I totally did.
Yeah, that's why I went all the way down to the five, is because I gotta be honest, I kind of didn't want to rewatch the end this morning. But I was like, no, I definitely slept through some of this. I need to rewatch it. I'm gonna talk about it, but gosh, it was not what I wanted to do while I was brewing coffee. I'll tell you that.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for tuning in, and we'll be back next week, I assume. I don't think I'm going out of town. It is Thanksgiving week, so maybe we'll have to get creative with our schedule.
No, I think I'm good for next week. I have virtually no vacation because I've already burned what little I have, and so I am working all week long except for Thanksgiving Day itself.
Oh boy. Well, bad for you, good for our recording schedule, but Beneath Twin Suns.
Yeah, it works.
So next week we'll be starting the Clone Wars, the TV series. We're going to be doing the chronological order,
yes,
of the Clone Wars TV series. So I believe if you want to follow along with us, you're going to need to watch, I think it's called Cat and Mouse. Is that the very first chronological episode? I believe it is.
Sounds familiar.
I can actually look this up. There is a Clone Wars chronological episode order that is official from StarWars.com. That is what we're going to be following. I highly recommend, if you want to follow along with us, if you want to watch them in chronological
order. Cat and Mouse
order,
is the right one, yes.
Cat and Mouse. And then the second episode is going to be Hidden Enemy. And I think we'll probably just do those two. I think that'll probably be enough of a booster. Those are chronologically the first two episodes of Clone Wars, so that's where we're going to be starting.
All right. Well, I am very excited for it. Until that episode, I hope everyone has a wonderful Thanksgiving week. Best of luck with any shopping that you're doing this week. I hope that you don't have to do it in person. And may the force be with you.
And also with you.